Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell, live in the IDM Content Kitchen. With me today, Chris Gilmore. And this one's going to be a little different than what people are used to. Yes, we're going to talk food, but not in the capacity in which people are accustomed to hearing on the show, which is going to be fun because we both worked in a prior life together in food. You've been in food most of your career.
Most of my life, yeah.
But now it's in the AI space, and anyone who's been listening has, I've been harping on this for quite some time, and we've dabbled in it, but you, I believe, are an expert that has more knowledge in this space than most practical people that I've come in contact with.
It doesn't exist yet to be an expert in AI, but
as much as possible.
Yep.
So let's start. I want to dig right into right now, and we'll bleed into the background, but I want to talk about Amplio, what you're doing and how AI is affecting the space, what you're doing at Amplio as far as video stitching, how Amplio came to be.
Sure.
And we'll piece it together from there.
Yeah. So Amplio got started as a way to empower brands that are smaller to be able to represent themselves online. That's effectively the mission. So it started as an idea to work with smaller companies to be able to compete with the big boys that have deep pockets, to have a similar level of content on their websites, digital footprints, brand awareness online. It started that way. So effectively what we do is we take AI generated clips, we stitch them together, and we create marketing materials and branding materials for small to mid-sized companies. It could be large companies too. They're just a little bit more reserved right now about that. And then we also do it on the personal side. So basically we tell stories. That's the gist of it. So on the personal side, what we would do is if you have a grandfather that was in World War II or something like that, we're able to take pictures that you give us, recreate video out of that in small snippets, stitch them together to create a narrative that you're able to share with your kids and their kids to tell grandpa's story so that his memory isn't lost, his sacrifices aren't forgotten. And so I think that's one of the things about AI that's incredible is, you know, that would have only been possible for the top percentage of people to be able to afford something like that. So AI brings that barrier to entry down so much that you're able to have an average family be able to tell the story of an immigrant mother or a war hero or just a father that worked some job for 45 years to provide an opportunity for their kids. You know, all those stories can be told now and they're not lost into the generations. So that's why I think this is really special and something that's really cool.
Yeah. You touch very high level of like, you make it sound like it's the simplest thing in the world. And in your brain, it might be simple, but it's simple, but complex at the same degree. It's, you got to know what tools, you got to know what you're doing.
Yep.
Talk about when we're built. Okay. Smaller company, small, mid-sized company. I'm trying to compete with the big guys out on the marketplace.
Sure.
How does it work? You know, from start inception, right? You say, you know, you just do this and this, but you know, someone comes and says, hey, I want to build a campaign ad around my cookie.
Sure. A lot of times when people approach us, they don't actually know what they want. You know, we're finding that with the small to mid-sized companies, one of the biggest things they're looking for is help me know what to do. You know, help me know how to build my brand. And that's where my background in food service helps is I've done marketing off and on my entire career at various levels, right? So we're able to take these companies that come to us and say, okay, so you want to represent yourself in what way? So we sit down, we have a meeting with them. We say, give me some bullets on what's important to you. You know, sometimes it's company history. Sometimes it's culture. Sometimes it's the quality of the food. But with AI, it doesn't matter what that is. We can present it the way that they want it to be presented. So the first thing that we do is we sit down and we just have basically a consultation. And we say, here's what Amplio can do for you. So let's just do a use case, like a small restaurant that's getting started, right? So with small restaurants, mom and pop shops, they're so busy just trying to create their product. Mm-hmm. And both of us understand that, right? And trying to train your staff. There's so much to do that being able to offload the branding side of things once your operations are in place is a tremendous advantage. And what AI does is it makes it affordable to do that. So like a mom and pop shop restaurant wouldn't be able to have that kind of marketing team behind them for years and years and years until they get their profit margins to the point they can afford it, right? But now what we're able to do is these small restaurants can reach out to us and say, hey, I'm up to here, I'm drowning, but I really feel like we've got something cool going on here and we want to tell the story. And then we take it from there and we say, we got it. We got it, right? So then we use all the models. We can get into as much detail with that as you want.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We use all the different models, and that's kind of our wheelhouse. Is I can tell you off the top of my head, based on what you tell me you want to make, which model is going to be best for making those specific things, mm-hmm. right? And that's where our expertise comes in. That's where I feel like, again, it feels weird to say I'm an expert just because it's so new still, you know, but I'm in it every day, right? So I think that's about as good as it gets right now in terms of being an expert on this stuff is just constantly being involved with it. So going back to the restaurant analogy, we would partner with this restaurant. We would say, tell me what your vision is for your brand. And then we would go on the creative side and we would make three or four different cuts of videos that tell what we think they're trying to say, right? And so we would present those to them. They can take 10 minutes away from the kitchen to go, yes, no, yes, no, and they're right back in the fire, right? And then we handle it, and that's the vision for what we're trying to do, is help these brands present themselves in a way that's professional and competitive without them having to do so much work or have so much money.
Okay. It sounds simplistic in the fact of a restaurant saying, hey, I need help, I need sure. support. How do you get over the hump of AI, the word AI slop, or the term AI slop? How do you get over the fact of people saying it doesn't look real? People aren't going to want to see this kind of image. I'm sure you have to overcome that objective all the time. What do you say to people who bring those terms up?
Well, first of all, there's a reason that we're pushing now. So just like a restaurant, my personal belief is you don't market a restaurant until operations are in place, right? It's the same thing here to a certain extent, where the level of AI slop has come down so much that if you have people that care about quality and you have people that care about editing and they have an eye for detail, you can remove almost all of it at this point. So the videos that Amplio is creating now, you're not going to see much of that. The initial iterations that you make, there will be some of it in there, but that's where refining comes down. Just like refining a recipe, right? It's going to be a similar principle where we prompt, we run the iterations, they come back and something looks wonky. So we run another iteration, and where we're seeing vast improvement right now, it's like step change improvement from model to model, is that the level of wonk comes way down with each model release. So now Seedance 2.0 is coming out. There's some copyright issues with it, so it's been delayed, but it's coming out. And I can honestly tell you that people who have said, well, AI looks real, Seedance is on another level.
Seedance.
Yeah. It's by, it's the same company that does TikTok.
ByteDance?
Yes, ByteDance. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Yes. So it's by the same company that does TikTok. So they have that. Then they have Seedream. They're rolling out a new Seedream model, Seedream 5.0. That's an image model, right? So then most people in the industry use image to video. So when you have a new image model come out, Google Nano Banana Pro 2.0 just came out.
I heard. Yeah. I have it. So I have Gemini, and I haven't dug into the Pro model too, yeah, to see what it kicks out. I'm interested to see that. And I think that's where I want to go with some of this conversation, sure, is the different models. But for a restaurant owner listening, what your background, I think, does play into, sure, how that you can help, because it's not, you aren't just an AI firm.
Not a tech guy.
Or a tech guy,
yeah,
that is trying to take what he knows and implement it into a business. You actually have been in the operation.
Yep.
You physically worked. I mean, that's how we met, was in operations. So maybe take a quick second to kind of go through your background, especially on the food side of things, and how that plays relevancy to this whole conversation.
Yeah. So right after college, I got my first job as an assistant manager in a little restaurant chain, then was little, called Pizza Ranch up north. They offered me a job as a salary manager in close to my hometown in Kansas. You know, I delivered pizzas all the way through college, worked there for 9 years, moved up to manager. I was one of those stupid kids, in my opinion, that was like, well, this isn't a career for me. I'm too good for that. Ridiculous, right? But I didn't know that at the time. I'm a musician. That was what I was going to school for. I had that mentality of, I'm going to be a musician, I'm just doing this to pay the bills, right? Well, turns out I loved it. And that's what I found so fascinating about your podcast episode talking about you, was I started on Broasters too. And I started on Brosters in a 110 degree kitchen in the summer. You know, like it was brutal. We would get out of work and like run across the street and hop the fence into the community pool because we were just like disgusting, right? But there's a camaraderie that comes from that I absolutely adore. And I have always absolutely adored that. So I went from Pizza Ranch to Noodles and Company. Started with them as an assistant manager. That got me moved back to my hometown. I went from an assistant salaried manager all the way up to area director of Kansas City. So I ran 8 locations in Kansas City. Did that for, I was with them for 6 years. Then we decided to move out to Chicago because my wife's family's here. And that's when I got started with Raising Cane's, which is a brand that I adore. I think that they do some stuff that nobody else does. You know, the big
and
question.
Their marketing is.
Oh, it's everything, dude.
It's really good.
Their marketing is great. Their training is unbelievable. Their culture, the culture is what gets it done though. Like, I've never worked for a brand or heard of a brand that does culture as well as they do, because they have an entire division at corporate that their entire purpose is just to make sure their employees are happy. Mm. Like, that doesn't exist in any other brand. And so the reason that I took that job initially was I felt like I kind of understood culture. I understood how to grow a restaurant. But I looked at their menu and I just went, this doesn't make any sense. They're one of the fastest growing chains in the country. And all they do is chicken fingers, Texas toast. I don't want to turn this into an infomercial for Raising Cane's, you know, but at the same time, like, I took that job because I didn't understand it. What is it about this place? Ironically, the secret sauce, because they actually have it, right? But like, what is it about this place that helps it grow? And it was so on mission with who I am as a person. They take care of their people. They're not apologetic about the way that they pay. They pay well at each level, but they say, look, if you want to move your career forward, you have to move up. Like you're never going to make enough money as a fry cook to be able to support a family, right? That's just not realistic. But that being said, if you work hard and you have fun, you can move up. And that's my MO, right? Is my happiest days in my food career. I am not a culinary person. Like, let's be clear about that. You know that. We laughed about that a lot, but my happiest days were always sitting across the table for somebody that had worked their butt off. And we were finally able to say, look, you got your promotion. Like, you start in 2 weeks, you've got this amount of money coming to you, here's your benefits package. And just seeing the look on their face, like, I didn't think this was real. Like, I never considered. So that's, I would say, if I was going to summarize my background in food, what it taught me is to be grateful for people at the ground level and understand from my own perspective, because I did it, what's valuable to them. And then that helped me learn to build teams and to build cultures, which is what really grows restaurants. Like, you know that. Yeah. Yes, you have to have, if you want to run a place to the level that you're capable of, you have to have a chef, you have to have, but like, what grows brands from a large scale standpoint is great training, great culture, and having the employees on the ground bought in. And so that's what I learned from Raising Cane's. I was able to take that. I think that's what I did well at the place that we worked together, you know? But that's transferring now to AI in a weird kind of way, where I feel like my interesting spectrum of what I've done. So I've been in sales too. That was my last job before I started Amplio. I've been in sales. I've been in marketing. I've been in operations. I've been in training. So like, I've got a decent understanding of, if a brand comes to me and says, I need to build my training program, like, I kind of know how to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on what the company is. Same thing with culture. If we're having a hard time getting our employees to buy in, like, they can hand me their company and I can go, I've got a pretty good idea of what, are we talking about hourly employees? We're talking about managers, you know? So I've got a pretty good idea of how to make those people feel valued in a legitimate way. I'm not pulling the wool over their eyes, you know, like, help paint a picture of why it's important to be doing what you're doing and the long-term possibilities that come from that. So Amplio incorporates all of those things to put messaging out there to whatever the brand wants the messaging to be about. And we've got one of my guys, his name is Craig. He's in Missouri. He's great. He's got his doctorate in orchestral conducting. So he's got a whole nother huge, wide, you know, a spectrum of experience that I can draw off of with him. And so we're able to just kind of listen to a company and say, okay, tell me the story that you want told. And then we've got such a wide array of experience between the two of us that we can kind of figure out how to tell that story. And like I said, go back to them and have 3 different versions of it and say, what do you like? What don't you like? And then drill it down. So
what I love is people are going to watch this and they're going to say, but you're taking away the creative outlet. You're taking away the creativity and videography and what it means. I view it. I'm always in neutral on topics. Yeah. I always stay in the middle, and then
it's a good place to start at least.
I might sway one way or the other depending on what the topic is. And while I don't view it as a complete takeover of that space, we had a conversation just yesterday. We were texting back and forth about CGI and the movie space. People don't understand. Movies have been using, they didn't call it AI. It was called CGI. It's just made up crap. People pretending there was dragons behind them and they were fighting in a medieval battle on a hog. Like, none of that's real.
Yeah.
But it looks real. Yet people are like, that's okay. That's AI at its core, right? It's a video generation model that's creating what it's telling them. Yes, they may put in some green screens and people acting things to help get those realistic movements. But I think now with the way
you can do that with AI too,
with where tech is going, some of that, can be replaced because it can actually watch you and learn what you're doing. You don't have to put on a full suit with those little dots all over the body.
Right. Right.
But that's what people don't understand, is that there is that ability to create video to some level, some degree, without needing to do it from scratch the old school hard way. And it reminds me a lot of, I've had this conversation before on this show about the old school chefs and how they think that the old school way is the only way. And it's like, well, no, you need to adopt technology in your kitchen or you could get left behind. I'm not saying that all don't, right? There's always exceptions to the rule, but this is the new norm. And if you don't jump on board, you're going to get left behind and you're not going to understand how things work.
Yeah.
You're going to get buried in the dust because somebody's going to be able to put out 1,000 times more content, right? And again, I'm torn. It's always not always quantity. You do need quality, but usually you start with quantity to build to quality because you have to figure out what people actually want to see.
Yeah. Well, and you have to figure out how to make good quality. I mean, you're going to put, going back to your question about slop, I mean, that is the biggest concern. You're right. So the number one complaint that I hear is that, well, all I see is AI slop. Well, that's because it lowers the barrier to entry to creating legitimate cinematography, you know? And so people that don't understand cinematography, me at first, you know, are going to make junk. It's just the way it is.
And that's a good point. Anyone can go on to any of these websites, buy a subscription, buy tokens,
right,
and then just type in a prompt and it'll create something.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they know what they're doing. That doesn't mean they know how to prompt it. And it is very good. It does exactly what you tell it to do. So if you are not specific with, I want this shade, I want this contrast, I want a saturation, I mean, all the things that come with actual, like you said, cinematography and videography, things that I've been learning of, like, holy shit, like I never understood that, you know, the aperture affects the white balance that then affects your ISO. And if you don't put them all in the right place, you get a shitty output. Even with the greatest, latest and greatest piece of equipment, you have to be able to know what you're doing with that equipment.
Yeah, and you have to have knowledge on one side or the other. So you can prompt for all that stuff, or you can know in post-production how to create artificially. So there's lots of ways to approach it, but ultimately what it comes down to is an eye for detail. It comes down to a devotion to create good quality content. But going back to what I was getting to is, there is going to be an avalanche of terrible. Like it just is the way it is. But the reason that I love it still, and I have the advantage of not being from the industry, right? But the reason that I love it still is that people that have ideas can express their ideas now for the first time. So for a couple of credits and some attention and some time with your butt in a desk chair, you can take an idea that you have and you can get it out, right? And I am the guy that I have all these ideas. My hands are not capable of taking the idea out of my head and putting it on a paper. I'm a god-awful artist, like terrible, right? I have a very creative mind, but until AI, I went through the entire progression. You know, I started trying to use Photoshop, and then I went to all kinds of CGI programs, ended up with Blender. And when AI came out, it just changed the game for me. Like I was able to take my idea and in minutes have a awful representation of what the idea was and then start tweaking it down. And that's what started the whole process of me learning this stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't have an art degree. I don't have any history in art, right? What I have is a creative mind and I feel like I have an eye for detail. You know, the reason that this is important is that yes, there's going to be an avalanche of crap, but in that crap, there are going to be some real diamonds that would not exist. They would still be in someone's head. Like imagine if there's somebody out there with an idea like Star Wars in their head, but they don't have the resources to tell the story, right? Like that's a huge lot. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, right? So that's a huge loss to us as humanity, is that idea never gets a chance to be presented to the rest of the world. Yeah, there might be a little bit of slop at first, but your average person, if the story is told well, if it's a compelling story, they can forgive a little bit of slop, right? But that's what I'm saying, is even the slop is getting to the point that it's, if you take the time to reiterate and get lots of little clips and stitch them together, even the slop is almost non-existent at this point. So if you know what you're doing, you know? So I think that the real win of AI is that it lowers the barrier to entry for ideas coming into focus in a way that has never been possible for an average person. Whereas like a kid right out of college, if they have a creative mind, can start making feature films, you know, and the industry people on my LinkedIn would just, oh my God, if they heard me say that, they don't know what they're doing. And in a way, that's right. But there's something about seeing your idea out of your head that is so inspiring to make you want to continue to hone the product, hone the idea. Whereas it just feels impossible. I feel like for me to make a movie, I have to go and get funding. I have to find a studio that's willing to help me produce it. I have to get my script approved. I don't even know where to start with any of that. It feels impossible. Whereas if you can, and your idea is there, it's like, oh, all of a sudden it's attainable, you know? And so that's the thing. I understand industry professionals. I understand why they're so hesitant about this, because it is a legitimate threat to their way of life, right? And that's, throughout history, that's the way it's been. CGI, there was some guy in a studio somewhere making models that went, oh my gosh, I'm gonna lose my job over this because now I don't need models anymore. It's the same exact thing, right? But it is at such a huge scale right now that so many people are affected that it is like hysteria, right? And so online, you've got, anytime I post anything, I just get dogpiled by, I call them anti-AI Andes, right? And so they come on and they post and they say, well, it's not real. They don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, yeah, granted, all of my posts say, look, this is garbage, but look what it's capable of. You know, that's the ethos of all of my posts. It's not, look at this amazing finished product. It's, I created this clip in 30 seconds. And when I was using Blender, it would have taken me 6 months.
Right.
You know, because I would have had to model everything out. I would have had to hand animate it. I would have had, you know, so that's the point. But so many of these people that are hesitant, I get it. I get why they're hesitant. But some of the biggest minds in the art industry are jumping on board with AI. So why would they be doing that if they didn't see the potential of, well, I don't care if my hand makes it or if AI does. Like, I just want to get my stories told. And so that's where I'm at with it.
Well, there's a reason that the big brands are using and creating, and yeah, good press or bad press is news. It's in the field, right? Dude, it gets people to talk.
Yeah.
And I talked about it literally with Chef Alvey about like the big game and the commercials and the things and what Coca-Cola did when they put out their winter thing, and it was all people just rip it.
Oh yeah.
Guess what? It got them to talk about the brand.
Yep.
And you don't think that has a correlation effect on people buying to some degree, subconsciously, 100%. If you get people to talk about your brand, that brings brand awareness in any way, shape, or form. Again, even if it's negative, it gets people to talk. And it's just funny how the mind works and how that those things work. If they're willing to put the time, energy, and money into it at a high level, like super high, you know, the prompt engineers they're probably using and the amount of ability they have, compute power, it's mind staggering what they can do. Well, it's only a matter of time before it trickles down to where the everyday person can do.
That's what I was going to say, is there wasn't an ad during the big game that I saw that Amplio couldn't do. I mean, that's, and I don't say that from a place of arrogance. Like it's staggering to me that the playing field has been leveled so much that if I wanted to, I could plagiarize a commercial that cost who knows how much to make, because you've got all these industry professionals, you know, and that's what I'm saying, is that it is going to fundamentally change the way the game is played. There's no question about that to me. You know, we talked about court law precedent, all that stuff. So we have to watch that carefully. But at the end of the day, the fact that there was an ad that was airing during the big game that was made by this gigantic corporation that I looked at it and I went, I can do that. Like 5 years ago, imagine the arrogance of saying, well, I could, there's no way. You'd have to have a studio. You'd have to have an amazing amount of capital to be able to build something like that. Mm-hmm. And now me and one guy can sit at our computers and make this stuff, you know? So no, is it going to be as good as Coca-Cola was, for example? Pretty close right now. I feel like once we start implementing Seedance, it would honestly be better, which is crazy. But I think that's what I love about it. But to go back to your point about no press is bad press, Amplio went from unknown to trending on LinkedIn because so many anti-AI Andes dogpiled me when I posted a clip. And the whole point of the clip, the whole point of the post was, here are the AI tools that have come out in the last month. Here's what they're good at. Here's their strengths. Here's their weaknesses. And I posted a 6-second clip of a video that I didn't polish at all. Like, it was first iteration. Look at what this is capable of in one iteration in 6 seconds. And I had 100 comments, literally 100 comments from guys. Well, this is blah, blah. And I was like, yes. Read the post, dude. Like, I never said that it was studio level quality. It was my first iteration. But then I asked some of these guys, how long would it have taken you to create that clip? Wonk and all, right? None of them answered, because the answer to that is like 3 or 4 weeks for a 6-second clip of, it was a shot of a World War II pilot in the cockpit of a plane with like a dogfight raging outside, right? And one of the planes was flying the wrong, they came up with everything you could possibly imagine as to why it was wonk. And I just kept saying, read the post, you know. But that's what we're up against, is you've got industry professionals that are so set in their ways against us. You've got corporations that are reading that stuff going, oh, I don't know, you know, because we both know that so much about using a company like Amplio is about how is it going to play. If people know we're using AI, what is that going to mean? So that's why I just feel like that's where we're at right now, is corporations, because of the big game ads, are starting to go, okay, well, if they're doing it, then it's probably okay if we do it, you know? And I think that is what's going to change the market. And you're going to see a lot of little Amplios popping up. I feel like we're at kind of the front of that, but you're going to see a lot of little companies like mine that are getting going, and then it just becomes about who understands the models the best, who has the team that cares about the detail, you know, who has the wherewithal and the devotion to like really commit to the art.
But how do you stay with the models? They're changing so fast every day. Like, they leapfrog constantly. Yep. And it's like, oh, well, this one is better in video generation or picture generation. And then 2 weeks later, oh, Gemini's now came out with Banana Pro. Nope, they're the standard now. How do you, it's difficult, right? For the everyday person, you know, think of, you know, the mom and pop that maybe wants to try and do some of this stuff on their own to a degree, right? And again, I implore anyone to just get on and play with these tools, because it just better versus you in what's available. And again, I know we're talking video and picture and that kind of stuff, marketing, but it can do everything. Again, I've talked about inventory and reconciliation. If you want an app, you can basically now tell these AI models, this is what I want out of an app, and it can essentially build it for you. It can put it into Python, JavaScript it, the whole nine yards, and then spit you out something that's physically able to be used. But to your point, it still needs to be refined. It's going to do exactly what you've told it to do. And if your instructions are very vague, guess what you're going to get? Yeah. A very vague output of the model. So let's dig into some of these models. Well, before we dig into the models, how do you stay on top of what makes sense, and how do you allocate resources to what makes sense, right? If you're buying something and you're invested in it, and then all of a sudden a month later, it's no longer, I would say, relevant. How do you handle all that?
So there's a couple pieces to it. So one of them is specialization. So we are very clear about what we do and what we don't do. This is a principle that I definitely learned from Raising Cane's, right? Is we are very specific and thoughtful about what aspects of AI we actually want to get into. So I made a joke with you that, like, if you ask me about Claude, I'll tell you that it's a guy that I knew in high school, right? Like, I understand it's kind of in my purview, like my peripheral, that stuff's going on, but like, I make a concerted point of not learning that side of AI. So I stay on the image, video, voice, anything that you would use to create a cinematic, you know, movie or whatever. So specialization is key, because it does move so fast that if you try to keep your arms around the whole thing, you can't. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, I have in Craig a guy that loves the process. He loves sitting in front of his computer. He loves the creative element of creating the videos. So I trained him how to do that. And we have a handshake agreement that his job is to create the content largely. You know, I do some of it, but largely he creates the content. And then almost my full-time job is exactly what we're talking about. So my full-time job is staying up on the models. My full-time job is watching podcasts and watching YouTube videos and staying up on case law and all of those things that, and then I take that knowledge and I teach it to him so that he doesn't have to spend hours and hours and hours watching videos, researching models. I can say, okay, here's the updated footprint based on CDance coming out. CDance is best at this, 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 and this, but Kling is still best at this, right? And so he's able to focus on the creative aspect of it and leave the in the weeds research to me. And I am literally every single day, probably for 2 hours, all I do is I'm on YouTube researching what's coming, what has released. And then I have subscriptions to platforms that give me access to all those models. And then I go on, I just play, right? So I create my own stuff. I use each model specifically. So in any given moment, I can kind of tell you if you want to create a shot of fill in the blank, which model you should use. And that's the key, is you have to have somebody in your organization that is capable of doing that so that you don't spend 2 hours iterating with the wrong model because it takes forever. It's expensive. So it is a worthwhile business investment to have somebody that has a deep knowledge of each model so that they can teach your company, if you're going to create this. And there's like a, it's like a training document, you know, like that we have of like, you want to create this clip. Where does it fit into the training document? Okay, it's here. So if I'm trying to create that, then my go-to model should be Kling, whatever the model is, you know? So having somebody at the top of the organization that keeps their arms around those models is super important. And that's something that you can only learn by listening to a podcast like this or by being in the trenches.
I was going to say, couldn't you just use AI to...
You could, yeah, but absolutely. But again, all of this implies a basic understanding of what AI does and doesn't do. So even with, like, so say you were going to Gemini and you were to say, I want to create this. It's not going to give you the specifics of details on models that are coming out now because the training data is 4 or 5 months behind, whatever it is. So if you plug it into Gemini, it's going to give you a basic understanding of CDance 1.0 or 1.5. Mm. It's not going to give you an understanding of what 2.0 is capable of because it hasn't had time to be trained on the data of all of the responses on the internet about what model should be used where. So you're still going to be a few months behind, but what that will do is it will give you a starting point. So it'll tell you about these platforms that I use that you can use all the models, and then you can jump off the diving board into that world and get yourself caught up. Hmm. But that's why, unless you're in the industry, unless you're doing this every day, you're not going to stay caught up on this stuff until you really commit to it. Yeah. So that would, I think that's really the answer, is have somebody that specialized and then offload everything else. Like, somebody has to be almost full-time into that and you have to organize yourself well around that.
Have you used Notebook LM in any capacity by chance? I'm just curious.
No, really all I use is Gemini.
Okay.
Because that's where I have my big subscription.
Well, it's built in. It's part of the, it's the Google.
After this, why don't you teach me? Because that's one of those things that I like.
Notebook
actively.
LM is the platform that you can upload massive amounts of data and then it spits out however you want it. It'll make a podcast out of the information. It'll spit it out as notes for you. So you basically give it all the resources that you want to learn about. So if you had a bunch of white papers on something, or if I had a whole book that I wanted to digest about a certain topic, and I'm like, I maybe don't have time to read it, or I need it in a condensed version, I could literally, if I have the copy of it, I could load it into it and then say, make a podcast out of this. And it gives me two hosts that are physically talking about
that's crazy.
That exact document
yeah.
in detail, and puts it in a way that, I mean, if you prompt it properly, in a way that you learn it because you can listen to it. I've done that with right here on this, there's certain guests that have a lot of information. It's a lot to try to digest in a very quick time period. And I'm like, this is going to be very difficult. I can load in all that information and spit it out in a podcast format in 30 minutes.
So how would you, let's just theoretically on this podcast, like, how would you load it in? Like, what does that mean? Do you just upload a clip of the sound, or?
You can upload, I got to double check on what all you can, but you can put website references. You can take actual physical PDFs, Word documents, anything. You basically can connect it. I believe you can connect it up to like your Google Drive. So if you have files within it, it can pull from those.
Show me this.
Those files.
We have literally thousands of 5 second clips, right?
Yeah. So it can take, again, and I've just been playing with it on the surface level. And I know people will be like, oh, it's been out for a while. And it has. But then you can say how you want it to spit out the information. Again, there's a whole list of options that you can actually get spit out from it. But the podcast one is a pretty cool thing where it's literally a dude, and I think you can actually set how you want them to talk, but mine's just a guy and a gal and they're chatting and it sounds real. It sounds natural. If you didn't know it was AI, you would be hard pressed to be like, this wasn't a real conversation that two people actually had about a topic.
Yeah.
But it puts it in a format, because I listen to a ton of podcasts. That's what I do on my car rides to and from wherever. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still love music. And when it's like, okay, I just need a break, like you switch it out. But for the larger part of it, that's where I'm getting a lot of information from, is from very specific podcasts. And that's just a way for me to get information. So if you've got information you need to learn, you want to learn, it's a really powerful tool to use in that capacity. Recipe development, those things. Like if you, again, a whole subject that you don't know much about, feed it in, it can spit it out in a language or a format. You don't have to sit there and read line by line.
Yep.
But you can actually do it. So let's talk about some of the models.
Well, real quick before we move on.
Sure.
So going back to the second thing that we're doing to keep up is we're offloading some of that stuff. So like we're being very intentional, like I said, about staying in our lane. So that's why if you talk to me about this, I'm like, I don't teach me, you know, but what I've done is I've reached out to a couple of my college buddies, some acquaintances that I know are doing this stuff that are doing the other side of things. And I'm saying, look, if I help you, will you help me? And he's like, yes, absolutely. So I've got a couple of acquaintances and some dear friends that are in the AI space on the other side of things. And instead of trying to integrate everything, we are just going to partner. So if I'm out there doing sales, trying to grow Amplio, and somebody comes to me and they say, well, I don't really know what you're offering, but do you guys do whatever, you know, can you help me build an app to sort customer leads, for example? I would say no, but I have a guy. Right. And so I have some arrangements where referrals are a thing. So if I send business to him, I get 50% of that. And if he sends business to me, I'll give him 50% of that. Mm. Because that way it allows us to specialize. It allows us to stay in our lane, get really, really, really good at that specific thing, and then still be able to help a customer. That's not really what we do, but I know. So if we're like charged with taking care of this brand, and I don't know how to do the thing they're asking for, I could reach out to Scott, for example, and say, hey, can you help me with this? He'll help me. And then I return the favor.
Yeah.
So I'm still able to provide full service to this brand, even if I don't know how to do it, by offloading the piece that I don't understand. So it allows us to stay focused.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people do in all industries.
Yeah, totally.
They'll take on a project and then they piece it out and they're like, hey, that's not my specialization. Hey, I need you because you understand education. Hey, I need you because you understand corporate dining. Hey, I understand.
Right.
You know what I mean? They'll piece it out.
With AI, like there's this wacky understanding that it's so easy that you can just know everything. Because people think, well, you just put in a prompt. You know, yeah. And that's just could not be far from the truth.
Far from the truth.
Now I will say that in 2 years, 3 years, I've been able to piece together some semblance of a cinematography understanding, right? So like it does make it easier to learn some basic concepts quickly, but there's just too much coming at you to be able to specialize in everything AI. So I'm not sure that it would occur to people to ask for outside help instead of trying to do everything themselves, like website design, things like that. I think that is something that we have kind of tripped and fallen and landed on, realizing, oh, this is the move. And again, like shout out to Raising Cane's. I think I learned it there. Like if you go to, I'm not sure if I'd use his name, but if you go to Todd Graves and you say, hey, why don't you have barbecue sauce? He'll be like, that's not what we do. End of discussion. It isn't, well, we've considered that. And, you know, maybe we'll think about blah, 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 blah. It's not what we do. You know, and fortunately for him, he's got the receipts literally to show I don't need to add barbecue sauce. If you love our chicken, just have a bottle of barbecue sauce in your car. Like it's not that hard,
sure.
You know? And so I learned from him that specialization is key. So you get really good at that one thing that you do. And they refer to it as your one love. So That I learned that there.
That makes a lot of sense. Specialize yep. and be the best at what you
unapologetically.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, exactly. No, we don't do that, but I have a guy. Like, that's a totally acceptable answer, in my opinion, if I was a customer. Totally acceptable answer. It isn't, well, sure, I know how to do that when you don't, and then you muck around and do a bad job. You know, it's just right at the onset, hey, that's not what we do, but I've got a guy, we'll get it done for you. That to me, I'd be like, wow, this guy's legit. You know, if you were able to say and acknowledge professionally, it's just not what we do, but I can get it done for you.
Yeah, you can't be everything to everybody yeah, exactly. all the time. There's just no way. Let's yep. talk about some of the specific models that you do use in your space, just so people have an idea of what's out there, what's available. Again, not that everyone's going to go on and start trying to create their own marketing videos. They can, but just where you would direct them to, okay, like, so, hey, I want to create pictures or I want to create video. Like, what tools do you recommend?
So maybe take you through the process.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we always start with storyboarding. So storyboarding means we use Adobe Premiere Pro, 2026, I think. No, 2025. No, 2026. We use Adobe Premiere Pro and we start with storyboard. So okay. what we do is we create images and we plug into a Premiere timeline those images. Now, this gets into the details of, like, depending on what kind of image I'm trying to make, I will use a different model. So those models almost exclusively that we use are Nana Banana, whatever version of it is most recent, which is 2.0 right now. It just came out like three weeks ago. That's the next iteration of Pro. So if you didn't mess around with Pro, you like skipped the whole version, which is great. I mean, you don't have, you know, but Nana Banana Pro, whatever version that's in, and then C-Dream 5.0 is out right now. I only have access to Lite at the moment, but it's fine. And then we'll create what the industry refers to as start frames. So you'll have a series of images that give you a visual representation of what the end product is going to look like. So if you're doing a 3-minute spot on building culture at a restaurant, for example, every 6 to 10 seconds, you're going to have a new start frame image.
Okay.
So that gives you a visual idea of the story that you want to tell. Okay. At that point, we take those images and then we start to iterate video. So right now, what we use, because Seedance isn't quite out yet. So what we use right now is Kling 3.0. Kling is kind of our go-to, but video models really ebb and flow. Like, much more than image models. Video models, it really depends on the week, which one is the best.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we use Kling for the most part, and there's economic reasons for this.
And
too.
That's Kling with a K for people that Kling don't
with
know.
A K, like, yeah.
Type in a K, not C-L-I-N-G.
Yeah. So there's some economic reasons reading in there too. Like, I get free iterations of Kling 2.5 with the platform that I use. So, like, we use that as much as we can because it keeps costs down. It doesn't sacrifice quality. So Kling, and then there's Veo, the Google's version, right? There's Wan 2.6, I think, is the most recent version that's out. They've faded now. When they first came out, they were the model, right? Mm-hmm. But they've faded now. Kling has released 3.0. Seedance is about to release. Haluo, I almost never use it, so I'm even blanking on the name. But there's another model that does some things. And then you've got Runway, which is an American brand that does, like, cinematography really well. We use that 15% of the time, depending on what we want. So, like, an example of when I say what model does what, an example is if you want a person to be walking towards the camera, notoriously that walk cycle will depend on the model. So depending on what kind of a walk cycle you want, you will choose the model accordingly. If you want somebody that's professional, that's walking towards the camera in a professional way, then I would almost always try with Runway first. That's what I use them for. Like, continuity of model movement, if it's kind of simplistic, something like a walk cycle, Runway does that really well. Whereas Kling is kind of like the jack of all trades. Kling does everything pretty well, so you're usually safe to use Kling. So anyway, getting back to the process, we will use whatever model we think is going to give us the best likelihood of the first or second iteration being correct. We'll iterate those videos and then we'll plug those videos in to the timeline. So we'll replace the image with the actual clip that starts to give us a sense of the duration of the video. Okay. Mm-hmm. So once the duration of the video is more clear, because both Craig and I are music guys, that's when we go to Suno, and we start creating our AI music. So once we have the kind of timeline and the video in place, we have a feel for what we want the overall aesthetic of the clip to be, of the video to be. Because we're both music guys, at that point, we're able to create music that matches the feel of the video. Mm-hmm. And then once the music's in, it starts to turn into art for us. So once the music's in there, the clips matching up with the music starts to feel like art. And then we engage our art brain and we watch the video a couple times and that clip's too long. It doesn't feel right. This clip is too short. We're missing a clip here that should show fill in the blank. And then we'll go back and we'll, that's like a rough draft basically. Once the music is in, it's basically a rough draft.
Okay, so let me stop you there.
Sure.
So you've got this rough draft of a video with a bunch of videos that have been stitched together.
Yep.
One, well, two part question. How are you stitching video if it's from different models? Right? You know, Okay, I took one from Runway and then I took one from Kling and I took one from VO. And it's like, well, how do you stitch all those together? Because they may look a little bit different because they're done from different models. I guess that's the first question.
That's a great question.
How do you stitch all that together? And then I guess the second question was then, like, if you're going to reiterate a piece of it, do you go back to that model that created that segment, or are you plugging in the new piece of video into a model again?
So that's a great question, man. Seriously, that's where you get into the nuance of what we do. So each of those questions has its own individual answer that will change based on the circumstance. So I'll try to remember them and go one by one. So the key there is you have to iterate in the same resolution. Okay. So
makes sense.
Doesn't really matter what model you use necessarily. You're going to get, if you do the same resolution, it's going to be able to clip together.
Okay.
So that goes back to your thing that you were saying about whatever program that was. When I said I have thousands of clips, that's why, because on our hard drive, each project that we do, I actually save this locally and on Google Drive. On each video that we make, each project has a folder that has subfolders, image, video, sound, music, dialogue. And so when we get the clip that we want, we save that from the model into the folder. Then we stitch from there. So
then are you stitching in like traditional methods with actual software?
Yeah, it's all in Adobe Premiere Pro.
I was going to say Premiere Pro, you could do it in Final Cut Pro, you could do it in DaVinci Resolve.
Yeah, like so Craig uses Final Cut.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to standardize that at some point.
Okay, so basically you're using that to capture the video that you need, and then but you're still then taking that as if someone shot it per se.
Yeah,
And putting it in and doing your actual editing, adding in music. Yep. And what he's talking about of adding folders, because I understand this language now, is that when you're putting stuff into these type of programs is when you load that data in, if you don't have it in these nice folders, you just get a big slop of files, and then you're trying to figure out, okay, I need a video. Well, it's not that easy to just find a video, but it'll subcategorize it into video, audio, and then you can select on a folder and it's going to show you just those files that you need and how you've named it. So that's a big piece of video editing.
So again, that's one of the things that when an AI Andy says, well, this is all you do is just enter a prompt. Like, that's another piece of it that people just don't think about. Like, the process of saving all of these files in an organized fashion so that you can then call in later is its own learning curve, because you're creating so much content when you're doing this that if you don't have some kind of an organizational structure, you will never find the thing again.
Yeah.
And now a lot of the online platforms that have multiple models are building this natively so that you can save the clips and favorite them and put them in folders, just like an iTunes playlist, for example. So they're allowing you natively on the site to be able to create buckets. So, but I don't trust that, because if for some reason they had a copyright violation and they disappeared, all of my content's gone. So I downloaded it all. I save it all manually to a hard drive. I save it all manually to my Google Drive. That way I have redundancy around what happens if those things get cut off. But going back to your questions, the resolution is key, okay? But one of the reasons that I love AI is because, to your point, if a customer looks at a clip and goes, I don't like that, it's so easy to fix it. Like you go back onto Kling or wherever, you reiterate a clip that they want, and you can just plug it in, and you're done.
Okay, now you got my brain thinking. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, because this happens all the time when you're doing video and you're getting B-roll out in the field, and you shoot something, and whatever, resolution's wrong, something was shiny, whatever, is messed up, and you go to edit, and you go, oh, shit, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Rather than going out and reshooting.
Exactly.
You could potentially take said, and again, I know video, it's difficult to upload and have it reiterate and whatever. I don't know time frames. Usually it's, you know, in the beginning it was like 3 seconds. And you're like, well,
yeah,
this is going to take me forever for whatever I need. So in theory, you could take a piece of footage you shot, load it in, and have it kind of redo it if you needed to a degree.
Yes and no. So there are models out there that do video to video. They are way far behind though. So that's where you're going to get a lot of slop. You're going to get a lot of distortion. You're going to get a lot of things that to put it to succinctly, we don't do that. So we would start from scratch. So we would start with, the thing is, we've got those input images.
That's what I was going to say. Or do you just take a picture of it?
So if you've got your original start frame image, which we have in a folder now, it's not hard to reiterate a video.
Hmm.
And you can prompt differently. And then, but that's what I'm saying is like, so let's say, for example, I think I use this example with you via text or whatever. If you're trying to teach somebody how to make a dish and you work for a steakhouse, for example, and you employed us to make a training video on how to make a dish. And 6 weeks into that, you decide, you know what? I don't like this ingredient. I need to swap this out for use your culinary brain. You know, we are able to then get an email from that client. They say, hey, I need this ingredient instead of the ingredient that we originally had. I can cut that and get it back to them within 10 minutes. Whereas the old way of doing things, I'd have to send out a camera crew.
Yeah.
We'd have to clean the kitchen up. It's such an ordeal.
Well, you'd have to try and also match the exact.
Exactly.
You know, you can tell if it's not sure. The same, because what if there was a pot in the back that had boiling water for whatever reason?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know.
And then all of a sudden you shoot it again and then you go to edit and you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like that pot wasn't.
Exactly.
It was there. Now it's not. People, I mean, at the end of the day, is it the end of the world? No. But from their perspective is they want it to be clean and organized and look exactly the same. Now you're trying to replicate your kitchen conditions and you may not be able to.
And that's, again, that's what's crazy is, let's say theoretically we had originally done it. They had originally done it using an actual cinematographer in-house, right? They could send me a photo of the ingredient. And if there was that pot sitting over there, I could remove it in Nana Banana. So I could effectively recreate the situation that they were originally filming in, and you wouldn't be able to tell. So I could take existing content, recut it in Adobe Premiere, slice it up, split it out, give it 5 extra seconds, whatever we need, add in that new shot, and it would be to the point that we would be able to do that in seconds. And so the time is one thing, but like the cost of bringing somebody out, like that's where all of your money goes when you make something like this, is the labor, the transport, the, you know, cleaning the kitchen for a day. Do I have to shut down my kitchen now to be able to make this kind of a video? You know, and so it just simplifies everything so much.
Man, that seems like a piece of service. And maybe obviously you could do it, but like somebody who already has existing video
totally. That
they've already spent gobs and gobs of money on, people coming out and capturing everything, and then they go, shit, we want to change it, and they go back, and then again,
yeah,
said company says, yeah, okay, we'll do it, but it's going to be another, you know, $3,000. I got to send a whole guy out there. They literally could send you the video and say, hey, from this point to this point, we need something changed. You know,
yep.
We're going from random, from cilantro to chives. You could literally be like, all right, we're changing that out, and then you could splice that in.
And again, I can physically see the relief on their face when I had that conversation. Like, because they think, dude, this is ridiculous. Like, it's going to cost me so much money to, and no, I'll have it back to you in an hour.
But people don't know these type of services
exactly
even exist. They think I have to go back to who made the video, and I'm going to have to redo it. Or they just leave it as is because they don't want to change it, and they maybe edit over it like, you know, don't use this, use this instead.
Which is, it is effectively my full-time job to spread the word of what's possible. Because people just don't know that that's a thing. So they'll go back and they'll spend $15,000 to have something reshot that I could have done for them in 10 minutes for $300.
Wow.
You know, it's just bonkers. But that's where this industry is going to lag for years, because it's about knowledge for people on the ground that are busy running their restaurant. they don't have time to research what's possible. They need it done. So the more I can spread the word on LinkedIn and get out and say, and not just me, but other companies like us, you know, it will revolutionize the industry for sure.
Yeah, it evens the playing field, to your yep. point of letting somebody smaller that doesn't have the infrastructure to put this huge marketing budget. And again, anyone could just grab their iPhone and do some videos and yep. fun stuff. There's a great place in Geneva. It's somewhere here in the Chicago area. Have you seen Judy's Pancakes?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. This is a lady.
If it's in Geneva, I need to know because we're
It's somewhere. It's somewhere up in that area. And she's got a pancake house and she just runs around and she'll like take like, you know, like there'll be a clip of like someone falling over and then it's the person, you know, then it,
yeah,
they
yeah.
stitch it into them. Like she does that kind of stuff. And then she'll be like, come eat Judy's pancakes. And it's hilarious. It's absolutely genius marketing. And it's yeah. like, you can do that stuff. But again, you still have to have somewhat of, you had to think of it.
Yeah.
You still have to come up with it. But back to training videos and everything else as you grow, you're going to need a support mechanism or structure. You're just not going to be able to continue to grow. And again, even if that's regionally, right, being able to put out content that can be done at a fractional cost to then be able to amplify that out in your area, right, with paid ads. If people know how to actually market properly, it's find organic that works and then put paid advertisement to it. Don't just create something and then put a bunch of money at it and be like, oh, I created this and I just put $200 to an ad. Well, you don't know if that's what people want to see, yep. but if you did the same type of creative, and to your point, you could be able to create four or five versions, you put yep. them out, look at the data analytics and say, this one performed the best. Let's put marketing dollars towards that because that's clearly what people want for whatever reason. You just never know what or why people watch a certain thing could be the
well,
hook.
And you can pivot the marketing platform then. You can the marketing campaign. So if you have one video that does really well, and one video that doesn't, then you can pivot to go more towards that video really quickly. Right. Whereas a lot of restaurants, there's a couple things that you brought up that are super important. A lot of restaurants, as you know, as an operator, when you get busy, that's all the stuff that goes out the window. Like you're just trying to get the doors open and close every day. And that's a blessing in a way, right? Because it means you're really busy. But the stuff that goes by the wayside is building a good training program to foster further growth. It's marketing to maybe market business sectors that are lagging. So your lunches are slow, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. that kind of like higher level tactical thinking goes out the window when you're just trying to staff your restaurant, get the doors open and closed and get the fryers clean at the end of the night, you know? So again, that's where employing a third party marketing agency is such a weapon, but most small businesses can't do it. So that allows us to take that role, you know? I've lost the other thing, so the impact of it.
No, it makes total sense. And it just, again, it gives people more options than what's been on the marketplace prior. Because yep. before it was find somebody who's going to create video, do everything else, but then they want some more out of it. And there's so many pieces to marketing that just, if you really dig into it, it's more complex than people realize. The thing is just, create a video, put it out, hope people see it. I mean, the spray and pray you can try and you might get lucky,
yeah.
you know, at some point, but you should have some intentionality behind your marketing plan.
So that was the other thing is with the spray and pray, that's exactly where I was going with that. Spray and pray, lots of small organizations, lots of small companies, they only get one shot at that. So if they budget $5,000 for a marketing campaign, that's all their money for the whole year, you know? And so they don't have the budget to pivot if they realize something works or something doesn't. Whereas if you employ AI, it drops the price of production so much that you're able to try some things, like we talked about. You're able to try some things and then still have budget left over.
Right. Or even if you wanted to have a camera crew, whatever. You wanted the real thing for whatever reason, just at your core, you're like, it at least is going to give you a sample size to say, what is the market engaging with? And then you're able to then create on top of
totally.
That, right? So even if they didn't want to go that full route and everything's fully create, okay, we know that this works because we put out 10 videos and these are the analytics and these three were similar. These worked. Okay, let's create some sort of campaign around this.
Sure.
Whatever that might be, the person.
I hadn't even thought of that. Like, that's a great idea. We could run sample sizes, even if they want to use like a typical camera crew production. Like, it hadn't even occurred to me to offer to do a bunch of trial packages for them and then hand it over to whatever firm they want to use. I would have no problem with that at all, you know. But it does give them an opportunity to trial and error to figure out which direction they want to go before they commit a ton of resources to it. Because, like I said, a lot of small to mid-sized businesses, they don't have resources
or even training models. Like we've been talking about training models. Is people learn differently.
Yep.
Well, what does your culture and your people, because it depends on what type of industry you're within the food and beverage industry, what segment you're in, that's, I mean, schools, it's a lot of, I hate to say it, lunch ladies and older, like that, yep. That's who's in there. Well, they're going to learn differently than,
I don't always say, hate to say it, they're the first people to acknowledge that.
But you go from that and then you go to, you know, some sort of fine dining type structure that has yep. multiple outlets, a restaurateur, but he wants his culture to be the same across his four platforms.
Well, the quick service, fast casual.
Right. It's going to a change on who's in there and how they're learning, whether that's visually, yep. whether that's hands-on, whatever. But I guess it would give you a chance from a training standpoint to try out some different things to see what works. Do we need to put in quizzes? Do we need to put in activities within training? Is it just straight?
Well, even the level of humor. Some companies want their training programs to be like, you know, really, really focused and professional.
Yeah.
And other companies want it to be a comedy act, you know, and we can do both. That's what's crazy. And so I think that is another huge element of all of this is it lets us tailor specifically to your brand, the kind of ethos and vibe that you want your brand to be represented by. We can do that for you. So it's been pretty crazy to dive into that world.
Wow. We've covered a lot in the AI sector, yeah. especially marketing video, so much. I can't wait to get this chopped up and put out. It's just another tool in the tool belt that can be used. Where does everyone go if they want to learn more about you and Amplio?
So we have a YouTube page right now. That's the main thing. It's Amplio AI is the name of our YouTube channel. They can contact me directly at chris@amplioai.net. I check that all the time. We don't have a website up and going yet just because we felt like a website was not necessary earlier, but we'll have that up soon. But if they want to get in contact with me, the email address is probably the best way. And then we've got a bunch of YouTube stuff. And I'm also on LinkedIn, Chris Gilmore. You can find me fairly easily. So there's lots of ways to get in contact with me, but we're a two-man show. So like getting all this stuff done and getting it launched, we're more concerned with functionality than we are with clearing hurdles for the sake of clearing hurdles. So one other thing I did want to say, if you've still got some time, is how does this apply to you? So for example, if you want to do a new line of dishes, you know, how could Amplio help out? Or how could a chef learn to integrate this stuff for themselves easily? I think that there's a lot to talk about and I can just start the breadcrumb trail. You know, if I was going to create a menu, for example, I would almost entirely use Google Nano Banana Pro for that, just for the images. And then you prompt for whatever you want it to look like. And the advantage there is you don't have to create the dish. And mm-hmm. you know how dishes go. If they sit on a counter, they start to wilt and not look so good. This takes all of that away. You know, so if I was going to build a menu out, for example, for a new restaurant, I would use Nano Banana. And then I would have narrations that I would build in 11 Labs or something like that that talks about the dish. But you write a script using your culinary experience. That's where I would not trust that to AI. So if it's your menu, if it's your thing, if it's what you're passionate about, I do not use AI for writing. I do not use AI for scripting. I just don't, because it loses the organic human touch, in my opinion. So if I was creating a menu, I would use 11 Labs. I would write my own script. I would use Nano Banana Pro to create the images. I would drill those down, create my however many dishes you have to create a visual representation of those. And then you can use Nano Banana to take out chili peppers if they're in there and you don't want them. It's super easy to do that. So you don't have to go back and remake the dish again. And then if you want video, I would move that from Nano Banana over to Kling or VO 3.5. And you can get, it's not going to do much, but it's going to animate the dish, make it more interesting. You know, so if you were going to do a menu board, for example, like every restaurant concept does, at least fast casual and quick service, you could have an animated 6-second video of what the dish looks like. Mm. That would be super compelling and easy to make, easy to change out. Everything about it is easy. Whereas if you try to do that with conventional means, you're making the dish 4 or 5 times. You only have a very small window to shoot, you know, probably 5 minutes until the dish starts looking bad and you have to fake it up to, you know, prop it up, make it look better. All of that is gone. Like it streamlines things so fast and so easily that even a guy like me that doesn't understand culinary, all I have to do is go, Jeff, hey, what is this supposed to look like? You tell me and it's done. you know, versus you'd have to come and cook it. You'd be with me for a whole day, you know, taking pictures. No, we don't like that. We got to cook it again. You can saute, and you know, all of that is gone. And, yeah.
I'm already using the
image. I'm sure you are. Yeah.
Image generation for menu development of,
sure.
Even if you don't get a good shot or you forget, you're like, shit, and you're eating it or whatever, depending. There's been multiple times. Yeah. It's like, we needed a picture of that. You can take a still from the video, mm-hmm. and then say, hey, I need this. Again, a little bit of prompt engineering. I need it to look like this, like this, like this, because I'm using it for this. You know, I'm doing a recipe blog. It'll give me a beautiful background, and it's real food. It's not a fake image of that food. It's just tweaked it in a way that makes it look like it was just made, or I just plated it, or I needed to add something and I forgot. It'll do it. And it is real. Like, it's not, again, some of the stuff that people think is just taking cartoon stuff and it's putting, it'll take a real thing.
Yeah, because it's trained on real data.
Yeah. It'll put it on there. So there's just so much that we can do. I'm glad you brought up the real world scenario that people could actually.
Yeah, that's what, just for your listeners, like how do I translate this into actually making an impact in my restaurant, you know, or in my kitchen or whatever? Like, that's the pathway that I would do if it was my restaurant. That's the pathway to really impacting your life. And then you take that use case and it becomes fairly easy at that point to translate that into whatever you're trying to do, training, whatever it is. So a small operator with a fairly small amount of time input, if they have the roadmap of how to get there, it saves them so much time of fiddling with models. So I just want to make sure we got that out there.
No, absolutely love it. I'm sure there's a lot more coming down the pike, especially for Amplio. You're just getting started, and the avenues and the ventures. I mean, this guy knows so much about AI. He knows the operations. Check it out. Go to YouTube. For anything, obviously, on the podcast, hit up all the channels as normal. Appreciate everybody going on, leaving reviews, comments. It really helps the channel grow. You know, starving artists out here trying to make it one day at a time, one episode at a time, one client at a time. So reach out if you ever have any questions. I'm sure Chris would love to.
Happy to. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Chat shop on AI and all things AI. So we'll leave it at that. And until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
Thanks, folks.